it's really an irresponsible thing to do as a spiritual leader, to hype your people's political passions up to such a, not just your people, but also your priests, political passions to such an extent they're going to go, I mean, I hope not, but someone might go and throw away his or her life.
Welcome to the Stand Firm podcast. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, January 13th, 2026. I'm Nick Lannon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm here with Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish in Hillsdale, Michigan. Guys, how are you doing today?
Great, Nick. Thanks.
Doing okay. It has been a heavy week in the news. I thought we'd dispense with witty banter this week and get right to it. Rene Goode was tragically killed in an altercation with an Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer in Minnesota, and it all seemed to culminate, at least theologically speaking, on Friday night when the Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire, Rob Hirschfeld, spoke at a vigil in her honor. We'll put the link to the video of his remarks in the notes. You can watch the whole thing, but he hits all the highlights. He mentions his own privilege. He claims that Constantine immediately corrupted and ruined the church. He says that the time for issuing statements is over and that we've entered a, quote, new era of martyrdom. Most chillingly, he says that he's told his clergy to, quote, get their affairs in order, to make sure they have their wills written, because now may be no longer the time for statements, but for us, with our bodies, to stand between the powers of this world and the most vulnerable. Now, we can talk about exactly what he's calling his clergy to do, but this seems to inevitably raise the question of Christians' obedience to the governing authorities. What does Paul mean when he writes Romans 13? What doesn't he mean? When should we be submissive to those God has placed in authority over us, and when shouldn't we be? Is this the kind of situation that Paul has in mind?
I mean, I think the rule of thumb is that when government commands you to do something that God forbids, or government forbids you to do something God commands, that's when you're disobedient. And my guess is, if I were to inhabit the bishop's head for a moment, that he would be thinking, well, we're commanded to be welcoming to the stranger and to the alien, to the immigrant, and ICE is being the opposite of that. And so we can't just sit by and do nothing. So we've got to stop them from committing this great injustice by throwing their bodies in the way of, I don't know what action that they're talking about that would lead to their deaths, unless they assume that ICE agents are murderous. And I think that may be the assumption, given what happened with Miss Goode. Goode, is it her last name?
Yeah.
That may be their assumption, given what the event, that the terrible thing that happened. I think we've talked about this in the show before, what it meant to be an alien or an immigrant in Israel. It meant that you were there under the law. You were not allowed to just to bring your own gods in, or at least the law as it was written. Who knows what actually happened, and the real fact of the matter is a different thing altogether. But in reality, or in the law itself, you, as an immigrant, you were there under very clear guidelines, and you were not to violate those. So just the fact of having people here illegally without submitting to our laws already sets the Old Testament category of sojourner aside. We're not talking about that category anymore. We're talking about a person who's come in illegally and is the process of breaking our laws, but who the previous administration, many of them were being given social security numbers, were being given all the benefits of citizenship, including access to welfare and monthly checks. And with a social security number, it's not that hard to get access to vote. So then the Trump administration's campaign before the election was built on closing the borders and removing those who are here illegally, beginning with those who have criminal records. You can't do that without doing basically with what ICE is doing. We can argue about whether or not ICE is being overly zealous. I don't know. I mean, that these people are here illegally does not justify any cruel or unusual treatment. And so there should be the law should be exercised in a judicial and not violent way, insofar as that can be, insofar as it's up to us. I don't see how this fits in any way the category of civil disobedience, where you can say that the law, the actions that this administration is taking requires Christian pastors to stand in between law enforcement officials and those they're trying to apprehend. I just can't see that. The only way you get there is if you baptized your leftist ideology to the point that bringing in immigrants into the country, regardless of whether they're breaking laws or not, becomes like a cardinal virtue itself that God commands us to do.
Exactly right. I mean, the precipitating cause with this, I mean, again, tragic. I mean, anytime someone is killed in the line of duty,
absolutely.
I mean, if you know police officers that have had to discharge their weapons, I mean, it's I've never met one that has, you know, gloried in that. And so, you know, but they've taken that as the touch point to reveal, I think you're exactly right, Matt, a fundamental conviction that is, to say it can't be defended in scripture, as you pointed out, is clear, but that is where the great divide lies in this point, is that people who fundamentally see, I guess, open borders as a Christian mandate, as far as I can tell, and that Christians should be advocating for that with their lives, perhaps, is what this bishop is intimating, over against people who with, well, you know, a much different set of convictions about the role of the state and the sword and the government with respect to national boundaries and the Christian's place within that. I mean, I think that's, and that's an interesting conversation. I mean, that's one that we're here for. But, you know, the difficulty with all these conversations is that when you have people, and on both sides, to be fair, but in this case in particular, who elevate that fundamental disagreement to with rhetoric like he was using to the point where it becomes an either or, you know, essentially either you're a Christian that agrees with me or you're some part of the, you know, the demonic Constantinian, you know, empire. I mean, we've heard this language for what, as long as we've been recovering Episcopalians at least. And so it wasn't surprising what he said in that respect. But yeah, the seriousness that he, with which he spoke, and then, you know, the call to martyrdom is what he said, was quite chilling, really, because, you know, particularly given the other obvious overreaches of our government, not the least of which, you know, legalized abortion and, you know, same-sex marriage and all the things that have been rightly pushed back against from Christians, that, you know, that people like us have done our best within the confines of the legal system to oppose and to be vocally against, rising up to the point, but short of active political violence. You know, there's a long history of all sorts of ways to oppose the government within the Western Christian tradition. And so, yeah, it was, I guess, from my perspective, it was, you know, as they say, you know, the revealing, like the silent part out loud, like this is finally the what has always really been the case when they talk about immigration laws and the role of the government, particularly as it has been exercised under President Trump in a, you know, sort of halting some of the direction that had been going, certainly under President Biden, that whatever the precipitating cause is, the fundamental argument is that somehow this is a non-Christian demonic empire that must be stopped at, you know, by any means necessary. And that's quite chilling, because, you know, to the extent that his 42 parishioners are listening to him, you know, in his diocese, one of them might get a wild hair and actually take him up on his somewhat volatile rhetoric. I don't know, you know, but I mean, that's, it was the only thing I've ever had to sign up for. I now have TikTok, which I regret and immediately.
I was able to find it on YouTube, thank goodness.
But I was not able to find it. So I was like, I don't even know.
Now you're a Chinese asset.
Well, I guess I've come clean then. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I mean, I thought, you know, the whole, what was really kind of, it was sad for me for him, but it also tracks with the decline of the Episcopal Church and the increasing irrelevancy of its leadership, was that he spoke quite movingly for him about being part of writing letters and making statements and all these things that he ultimately admitted had in his mind come to naught or had not succeeded in any way. And there was sort of a cynical admission that he felt, you know, powerless, but for perhaps physically involving himself. And there was a little bit of, you know, I was a little sad for the man, I have to admit. I mean, just as a human being. But of course, when he listed the litany of causes that he was, you know, had been advocating his entire life, then, well, I was jerked back to reality and was glad that there were very few people actually paying attention.
Because these are the causes of wickedness, right? I mean, this is the
That's
clear
right.
distinction is that we are called to oppose laws that are wicked. And that's why, maybe not in every case, but for the most part, when you see people writing online about incidents like this, it's always using language like refugees and immigrants who both enjoy a legal status here in the United States. However, illegal immigrants do not, or undocumented immigrants, or whatever you want to say. And this is a key distinction, which sounds academic to some, but there are multiple words in Hebrew for the various kinds of non-Israelites who would come through the land. You could either come and become a Jew, or you could be an itinerant worker, or you could just be passing through. Those are all different Hebrew words that are largely translated the same in our English Old Testaments. But the key distinctions are, what is somebody here to do? Are they going home? Are they becoming one of us? Or are they not becoming one of us and simply, in a sense, taking what should be Israel's? They're treated very differently because they're doing something wicked, not the actual sojourner and alien in your midst who is seeking to become part of your people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to me that this blew up in the wake of the revelations of the fraud that's been going on in Minneapolis and Minnesota, where there's, you know, daycare set up without any children. So they needed it's I'm trying not to be a conspiracy theorist here, but it was getting hot for Tim Walz and others in Minnesota, and then suddenly this incident takes place, and now they have now every the fraud's forgotten, at least on the headlines the legacy media, the fraud's forgotten, and now we're focusing on how bad ICE is and how mean the Trump administration is. It seems like a very convenient timing thing. And not, I'm of course the event itself happened. It's just the political capitalization on the event, on the tragic death of this woman. I think that was fairly predictable given what was given the direction of the news cycle and the emphasis on fraud that we'd been had running for 3 days beforehand. So now the narrative that we're being asked to believe is very much like the narrative that was put forward after the death of George Floyd. It's almost, I mean, this seems a very similar event that the people on the ideological left are going to use this as a trigger to roll back as much of as they can with regard to the immigration narrative, and also inflame people. I mean, I don't know if you guys have watched the videos, but it's just people are going to Minnesota who believe they're taking part in a revolution because ICE is tantamount to the Gestapo, and Trump is, of course, Hitler. And it's getting really dangerous out there.
Either that, or they're being told that ICE doesn't actually have any authority and it's not really official. And they're being told very dangerous things about what they can and can't do and say to who are, these are actual federal officers who do have lots of authority, whether or not you agree with that. There's a lot of untrue things that are being fed to angry people that are leading them to have a confrontation that they might safely have with you or me, but that they cannot safely have with an armed federal agent.
Right.
Yeah.
Lost in the middle of all this are the legal immigrants, you know, and the legal refugees who have applied and have, you know, gone through the paperwork and are here by our beneficence, which through our tax money, which I'm happy in that respect to have, you know, taken from me. And, you know, they're being rightly, wrongly, you know, often lumped in sort of hardworking immigrant families that with, you know, first, second, third generation businesses that are trying to stay within the system. You know, that's a different category. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I lived in Vienna for 6 months with a visa that we had to get renewed every 30 days. But, you know, I mean, there was quite an intense process to get a work visa that had culminated in a letter from Secretary of State's office, like on my behalf, like just saying, like, please let this guy get some health insurance. And I was very grateful for that. But that sort of anxiety they lived under for 6 months, I can't imagine just sort of not only having that or ignoring it, really seems to be more the case, and then setting yourself up as a beneficiary of all these fake businesses, perhaps, or at least entitlements that you know legal immigrants are entitled to, but you somehow have gamed the system. I mean, that speaks to two entirely separate tracks that I think we're right to at least, well, expose and then have some conversations about, you know, where do we go from here? But yeah, it's been a rather interesting conversation, and I think a needed one, because you know it's not sustainable what the path we're currently on. And again, in the back of my mind, I always have the hardworking legal, you know, immigrants who are not able to live with themselves by breaking, you know, clear laws. And I feel for them in the midst of this in particular, because of course, you know, it just kind of all gets lumped in together. And it's another indication of back to the question of Christians with respect to the law. You know, like when laws are just laws, like I would argue, you know, obviously I don't know the entire legal literature surrounding our immigration policy, but in general, there is a policy for legal immigration, for established refugee status, and you know, those seem to be, as far as we can tell, just and fair. And you know, we could argue about the specifics. I'm sure people do. But if, for instance, we had a policy that, you know, was clearly unjust with respect to immigration and refugees, well, then I think we would have an obligation to speak up and say, you know, we have these resources, we have this incredible land of the free, and we are, you know, we're not a nation of immigrants exactly, more of like colonizers and settlers, but also immigrants. I mean, there's a mix of all of those type people. So what I keep thinking about with respect to the analogy with the Gestapo, Matt, is that, you know, by God's grace, we've been allowed to live in a time of almost unchecked information sharing, and you know, these body cams and the satellites and the drone footage and all the things give an unparalleled access to the good, bad, and the ugly of our sort of political public life together. And you know, the fact that you know, everyone has a cell phone and everyone's being recorded, and we still know almost by name the people that have you know, regrettably died in these altercations is remarkable. I mean, over against the question of the Gestapo, you know, all of a sudden you have, you know, houses disappear and coworkers just, you know, extended vacations or however they explain to themselves during that time. But we have the privilege of seeing in real time almost, again, some of the excesses, some of the of all of it. And we can be educated and, you know, light is coming into the darkness. I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't want to be a police officer without a body cam, you know, basically on 24 hours a day, even while I was sleeping at this point. You know, I can't imagine, you know, because I would, by God's grace, hopefully try my best to be an honest, law-abiding executor of the just laws that I had been asked to uphold. Now, of course, they're bad actors, but you know, that's becoming harder to be an openly bad actor, at least in public. And I'm grateful for that, you know. And so, for instance, with respect to Miss Good, you know, I think that it was, if we look at the video, it was a tragic situation that there are two sides to, of course, and I would imagine that there will be an investigation and there will be a trial of some sort, and there will be a ruling on it, you know. And it's obviously complicated and ultimately tragic that anyone had to die. But you know, the idea that you could look at it and see, you know, from even with the video, 100% victim and perpetrator on either side. That's when people start talking like that, then I just say, well, this is in service of another agenda, which is fine, because we have agendas about the fundamental conversation we're having. But to, you know, once again, the victims, the real victims in any of these situations get used, get weaponized, to pun not intended, towards a larger conversation. And I think, you know, the bishop's statement didn't help that. You know, he thought maybe he was being magnanimous and somehow, you know, prophetically Christian, but he's simply entrenching and digging in one side of this debate in a way that I think, frankly, Christians, I think that's the exact opposite of what Christians should be doing. You know, I mean, the Lord is still on the throne. Our days are numbered in his hand, and the ultimate eschaton, when he consummates all things, is still a guaranteed reality in the future. And so he's not up there wringing his hands, wondering what's going on. You know, if only he could interact with all these people in a different way. So, you know, fundamentally based on that, you say, well, you know, this side of heaven, we muddy it out with the authorities and rulers we've been given, and we, as Christians, we take our guidance from the scriptures, and we do our best to live under the authorities that have been established, as best we can, until, as you said before, Matt, we are directly prescribed or directed against that, and then we, you know, then we pay the consequence, which of course we have a long Christian history of people doing, and so. You know, I mean, I don't look forward to, I hope it doesn't get that dark, but, you know, I mean, it certainly has been in the past, and we're still here. So, you know, Lord have mercy.
Feel like it's usually invoked in arguments against me for some reason, but I'm recalling during COVID when we were, for instance, advocating for public worship services when in some places it was illegal to have them, and it was commonly noted that when Paul wrote Romans 13, the authority was held by Nero Caesar, right? So this is a antagonist of the first order, and Paul is saying God put him there. And to the extent that he's not telling you to disobey, you need to be subservient to him. Now, in this instance, it seems like as sort of low on the totem pole as you might put Trump, certainly Nero seems like he'd have to go a step or two lower.
I might argue Caligula, but again,
Right. So it's worth remembering, I think, as we read Romans and Romans 13, that we perhaps live in a less oppressive world and under a less oppressive regime than Paul did when he wrote about our obedience to the authorities.
Well, that's why his the bishop's statement, you know, that he stated as fact that since Constantine became a Christian and essentially baptized the Roman Empire, that we have subsequently lived in an ungodly, I forget how he said it, you know, like unrighteous tyranny or something. And it's just, it's, I mean, the level of ignorance of history and of real world consequence is staggering. I mean, the ignorance of history is staggering in that statement, given the comparable sort of average, not only lifespan, but quality of life under your, you know, peasant in the second and third century under the Roman Empire before and after it was Christian. Now, of course, it wasn't an overnight transition, but the idea that we are somehow in America, in particular, living in a godless, tyrannical, satanic environment for the sake of your day-to-day person that inhabits or lives here is just patently false. I mean, just go to non-Christian countries, even today, and see how they treat the poor and the prisoners and the outcasts, you know. And then, yes, we have some real work to do to reach, you know, the heavenly city with respect to the way we do that. But I mean, goodness gracious, like we don't just execute people in the street, you know, we don't just discard, you know, unwanted children, although that's becoming more the case. But
And they would
I
say that
mean,
we
we,
just did execute someone in the street. I mean, I wouldn't make that argument, but that's what you hear.
well, I agree with you. If there weren't any discussion following that, and there wasn't going to be an investigation, and there's going to be grand juries, and I mean, you know, it's going to be an incredibly beautiful and complex and complicated procedure to finally, you know, close the book on what exactly happened. And it would be imperfect, of course, because in a perfect world, there wouldn't have been an altercation in the first place. But, you know, that we've talked about this since we started this podcast, you know, because I think when we began, it was just that we were beginning seeing, I think, in the summer of George Floyd, the breakdown of the rule of law. Remember, and people were saying, well, it's just stuff and we need to let people, you know, let off steam and blow up cities and walk through and, you know, who are we to say? It's like, well, We are beneficiaries of a patrimony and of an incredible weight of people's lives spent, and we are in danger of just squandering it, you know. And one of those amazing gifts that we've been given is this incredibly complex rule of law that is predicated fundamentally on the dignity of every human being. And even then, you know, even with the deportations of the illegal immigrants, like, you know, there are other ways to deport people than actually flying them back to the places from whence they came. And again, these are all comparably speaking with respect to the way that people have dealt with problems throughout human history. Incredible. I mean, they're almost miracles, really. I mean, it's almost miraculous that we would even have a system that would allow for safe transport back as an illegal immigrant into a country, particularly after you had been accused or rightly convicted of crimes in that country. You know, I mean, there are, I mean, hellish basement prisons even now around the world full of people who have done much less in places. And I thank God I don't live there, but I do pray that I know that the people, the Christians that live in those places under the rule of their the conscience bound by Romans 13 are praying that their systems look ultimately something more like our admittedly broken system than their currently demonic system. I mean,
Yeah,
there's no question
system
about
that's
that.
functioning just like it was designed to.
That's right. That's right. We're like, you know, I mean, so it's, I mean, that's why I don't have a lot of time in my own intellectual consideration to give a lot of weight to the bishop's argument and the subsequent discussions when immediately he goes back to Constantine and says that's somehow a bad thing. I wouldn't say it's an unalloyed good, but at the same time, nothing this side of heaven would be except for the hope of the gospel. And so, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, that just the longer we walk through all of this and the clearer the conversations become, it's obvious that there are, again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist either, Matt, but there's certainly a group or a mindset among some that the entire American experiment is flawed and fundamentally should be taken down or torn down. And they use any and every opportunity they can to dig or hit at the roots of the whole experiment. And I think that people are, you know, to use the jargon, waking up to that. You know, people are starting to see, like, maybe the adults who we thought were going to figure it out aren't going to, you know, like maybe the, and when we finally sit down and say, oh, you know, we elected so and so, I'm sure that they will have a sober mind about this and think rationally and be appreciative for what they've been given to steward. And it turns out maybe we were wrong. You know, so I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is exactly, but, you know, encourage your thoughtful, virtuous, civic-minded parishioners to brace themselves for a fight. But, like, it seems like a fight that's coming or is here and one worth having. And, you know, I
I mean,
think we're watching it real time. Sorry, go ahead.
but I was just going to say, you know, obviously, immigration policy is something that Christians can disagree about. Right? There are some basic rules that Scripture gives us for how to treat people. No cruelty, no injustice, all that. But how
Yeah,
exactly
equal.
those? What's
Yeah,
that?
equal weights and measures, you know, and
Right,
like honest
equal.
judges. I mean, these are.
Right. So how you apply those principles to immigration is going to differ. It's going to differ among
That's right.
Christians. And that's really the problem with the bishop's statement is that, like you said, I think it's what you said earlier, this is not for him a question of policy. Like, can I disagree with Bishop? I disagree with President Trump's policy. Like, that's if he wants to say he disagrees with it, that's fine. But that's this is now he's going to put his priests' lives in the line. He's going to send people to death over a disagreement about policy that, biblically speaking, is neither here nor there. I mean,
Right.
it's really an irresponsible thing to do as a spiritual leader to hype your people's political passions up to such a, not just your people, but also your priests' political passions to such an extent that they're going to go. I mean, I hope not, but someone might go and throw away his or her life, thinking that he's doing it or she's doing it as a martyr. And I mean, it's hard to think of a more irresponsible thing to do as a spiritual leader, because this isn't just doing it. This isn't just saying as a political leader of some, you know, radical sect, let's go out and fight for our political will. This is someone invoking the name of God. God's on his side, he thinks, and he's on God's side. And so disagreeing with him isn't, like you said earlier, it's sin. But we if I disagree with his take on the immigration policy of this administration, I think in probably his mind, I'm not a Christian. If he's willing to send his priests off to die in opposition to it, all of us must be apostates, I guess. Which goes to the question, you know, this is where the irony of the mixture of leftist politics and Christianity is pretty stark, because it is on the left you most often hear that evangelical Christians have wrapped the flag around the cross. But I don't think I've listened to Before He Died Jerry Falwell sermons. I've listened to some pretty strong Republican guys who seem very political on the evangelical right in the 80s and 90s and in the 2000s preach. I've never heard anything like this of this level, right. this level of no space at all between my ideology and my religion. It's gone. But I guarantee you, they would say, a lot of people in that diocese, and maybe the bishop himself would say, that we're the ones who are too political because they've so wedded themselves to their ideology, they can't see anymore. It's just one and the same.
I must imagine, I'm sure this is just a theoretical priest. I'm sure such a person does not actually exist, but just imagine the Episcopal priest in the Diocese of New Hampshire, who has been up until now just committed to proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ every Sunday. This now lays a millstone on his shoulders, and he's going to feel like he's not doing the will of his bishop, and that he has to stop preaching the gospel and start laying his life on the line for his politics.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point, especially given the fact that while we were among Episcopal priests, most of our ministry, or I was most of a lot of my ministry, not most of it, that not many of them
early 20th century was the thing you're at. That's right. Yeah.
Not many of them are great Bible scholars, right? So a lot of them don't have the resources to reason through the biblical resources to reason through why the bishop's instruction may not be, you know, God's instruction to them. So yeah, it makes it even worse. The context of having a biblically illiterate clergy and people.
Well, we've already, I mean, by the time, I forget who said, you know, by the time the bishop lists the litany of causes that he is supporting, you know, LGBTQ and abortion and all the things, that it seems, even to the extent that he was or is a biblical scholar, he's already, you know, sort of invalidated at least the authority the Bible should hold in his life at that point. You know, I was actually thinking about that this morning. I was listening to the briefing, as our listener, I'm sure, does also, but Dr. Moeller was talking about the possibility of the Hyde Amendment coming into question. I don't know if you know the Hyde Amendment. You know, it's the prohibition against federal funds being used for abortion. And I was considering, you know, from the scriptures, my opposition to abortion at every case, what I'm going to do, or what will be the case if, in fact, we turn out to have something of our federal tax money go towards funding abortions. I was thinking, well, you know, I'm not sure I would do a Tea Party situation here, but at the same time, like, that's going to be an interesting conscience road to walk for Christians. They could, again, I'm not suggesting I would put myself in any situation like the bishop suggesting, but there are places for civil disobedience. There are places for you know, conscientious objection, and there are means for that even in our you know, government. I mean, you might get punished for it. You know, if you just stop paying your taxes, you know, you're not going to get away with that for long. But you might be one of the righteous who are put in prison for that matter. You know, and that would been, again, to your point, Matt, be something that would be based upon the clear teachings of Scripture, what can and cannot be supported or celebrated as a Christian from God's own direction. And again, that's just a hypothetical at this point. But back again to your point, Matt, if you're not searching the Scriptures and trusting the wisdom of the tradition, for lack of a better word, with respect to the way that people have thought through these things, committed fundamentally to the Word of God, well, then you're going to find yourself in a place like the bishop of essentially baptizing whatever cause you feel very strongly about, saying, "Thus says the Lord." And then, to your point, Nick, putting millstones around people's necks that, possibly, or in this case, could very clearly be removed by a thoughtful Christian person. And yet, here we are. We have this situation where, again, to your point, Matt, the great irony that we've seen firsthand of the quote unquote apolitical Episcopal Church, just exposed once again, or the idea that it's apolitical when essentially it's just a left-leaning political action committee, with, funny hats, as they say. And so, I think this is just an important conversation to have. We've been having it through this podcast, but certainly in our local congregations ever since, what I say, when since Trump came down the elevator, some almost 10 years ago now, because people's heads have exploded and need to be, repaired and screwed back on. And there are thoughtful places to disagree, and there are biblical ways of even disagreeing in that and there. But we don't have appendices in our Bible that has like a citizenship test for the, kingdom of God and a Christian country. We don't have like, there's been no special revelation about tariffs certainly to the extent of, 4%, 8%, 9, on produced goods or organic. I mean, who knows? And so that's going to be something that we have to argue about. But the difficulty is that, as I said before, it seems to be that the fundamental argument is laid at the root of the entire, what Oscanus calls the American experiment. And that's more troubling to me than any of the other aspects of the particulars of the conversation. If we have a new administration that comes in and opens up the immigration policy to, to 10 times the number that came in illegally, but there's some sort of rationale behind it that makes sense. And, it may not be something you personally would like, but okay. I mean, you can make an argument and we'll vote for you and enact it, that sort of thing. But it's troubling and disheartening to see the real world consequences of this, for lack of a better word, worldview divide, being played out in real time amongst ironically the vulnerable people, the young and the ignorant and the easily persuaded via emotion and passion are being riled up and weaponized by people who should know better. I mean, frankly, and that's what, that's what we're watching real time.
Well, we are out of time. Thank you for listening to Stand Firm today. If you want to keep the conversation going with us, be in touch, rate and review the podcast on iTunes, send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com, or join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. Thanks to JD Koch and Matt Kennedy. I'm Nick Lannon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.